What happened, and nobody will be able to investigate, not for months, maybe years. He tried to calm himself as he waited for his father's response. Gaining Astro Manufacturing is worth the risk, the old man agreed, especially since no one can connect you with the, accident. She can. Humphreys knew what his father was going to say. Then you'll have to get rid of her. But that doesn't mean I have to kill her. I don't want to do that. She's a valuable asset. We can use her. It wasn't a spur-of-the-moment decision, Humphreys told himself. Dr. Cardenas and her knowledge of nanotechnology have been part of his long-range plan all along. It's just that this crisis has forced me to move faster than I originally planned to, he told himself. Use her? His father snapped. How? Waving a hand in the air, Humphreys said vaguely, nanotechnology. She's the top expert. Without her, it would have taken years to build that fusion rocket. His father cackled. You don't have the guts to take her out. Don't be an idiot, Dad. She's much more valuable to me alive than dead. You want her to be part of your team, then? His father replied. Yes, of course. But she's having this goddamn attack of integrity. She's got cold feet about Randolph, and if I don't stop her, she'll tell everyone about the sabotage, even though she's a party to it. The old man chuckled when he heard his son's complaint. An attack of integrity, eh? Well, there are ways to get around that. How? It was maddening to have to wait nearly 3 seconds for his father's response. Make her an offer that she can't accept. What? Again, the interminable wait. Then, offer her something that she really wants but can't agree to. Make her an offer that really tempts her, but she'll have to reject. Then you've shown yourself to be reasonable, and she's being the difficult one. Then she'll be more willing to agree to your next offer. Humphreys was impressed. That's Machiavellian. When his father answered, his seamed, sagging face was strangely contorted, as if he was suppressing a guffaw. Yes, it is, isn't it? And it works. Humphreys could only sit there and admire the old bastard. More thoughtfully, his father asked, What's her weak point? What does Cardenas want that she can't get unless you give it to her? Her grandchildren. They'll be our hostages. Ooh, I'll do it in a nice, elegant manner. But I'll let her know that either she works for me or her grandchildren suffer. She'll do what I want. You really want to be emperor of the world, don't you, Martin? Humphreys blanched. Your world? God forbid. Earth is a shambles, and it isn't going to get any better. You can have it. You're welcome to it. If I make myself emperor, it'll be up here. Selene, the moon, the asteroids. That's where the power is. That's where the future lies. I'll be emperor of these worlds, all right. Gladly. For long moments, his father said nothing. At last, the old man muttered, God help us all.
Star Power 1.
Lars Fuchs was scowling as he peered at the display screen. Well? Dan prompted. The two men stood in the cramped sensor bay where Fuchs had rigged a makeshift laboratory by yanking one of the ship's mass spectrometers from its mounting and putting it on the repair bench where he was using it to examine the sample of dull gray wire that Poncho had brought in. A thin, sky-blue coolant tube lay alongside the wire. Dan knew the wire had originally run through the tube like an arm in a sleeve. There is no leak in the coolant line, Fuchs said. I drove pressurized nitrogen through it, and it didn't leak. Dan felt puzzled. Then what's causing the hot spot? Pointing to the tangle of curves displayed on the screen, Fuchs said, The composition of the wire seems to match these specifications quite closely. Yttrium, barium, copper, oxygen, all the elements are in their proper proportions. That doesn't tell us diddly squat, Dan groused. Fuchs's frown deepened as he studied the display. The copper level seems slightly low. Low? That might be a manufacturing defect. Perhaps that's the reason for the problem. But there's no leak. Fuchs rubbed his broad, square chin. None that I can detect with this equipment. Really, We don't have the proper equipment for diagnosing this. We would need a much more powerful microscope and... Dan, we're receiving a call for you. Amanda's voice came through the speaker in the sensor bays overhead. It's from George Ambrose, marked urgent and confidential. I'd better get back up to the bridge, Dan said. Do the best you can, Lars, with what you've got. Fuchs nodded unhappily.
How can a man accomplish anything without the proper tools? He asked himself. With a heavy sigh, he turned back to the display screen while Randolph ducked through the hatch and headed forward. What other senses can I take from the set we have to examine this bit of wire? Everything we have here has been designed to measure gross chemical composition of asteroids, not fine details of a snippet of superconducting wire. With nothing better that he could think of, Fuchs fired up the mass spectrometer again and took another sampling of the wire's composition. When the curves took shape on the display screen, his eyes went wide with surprised disbelief. George held one meaty hand over the earphone, clamped to the side of his head, listening intently to Dan Randolph's tense, urgent voice. There was no video transmission. Dan had sent audio only. You go with Blylevin to Stavanger himself and tell him what's happened. Stavanger can bypass a lot of red tape and get Selene's security people to turn the place upside down. He can't hide much in a closed community like Selene. A really thorough search will find Dr. Cardenas, or her body. George nodded unconsciously as he listened. Once, 10 years earlier, he had lived as a fugitive on the fringes of Selene, an outcast among other outcasts who called themselves the Lunar Underground. But they had survived principally on the sufferance of Selene's straight community. They could exist on the fringes because nobody cared about them, as long as they didn't make nuisances of themselves. George agreed with Dan up to a point. If Selene's security cops wanted to find a person, there wasn't much chance of hiding. But a dead body could be toted outside, concealed in a tractor, and dumped in the barren wilderness of the moon's airless surface. Kai, Dan, he half-whispered into the pin mic at his lips. I'll get to Stavanger, and we'll find Dr. Cardenas. Unless she's already dead. Frank Blylevin was head of Astro Corporate Security, a round, florid-faced, jovial-looking man with thinning straw-colored hair that he wore down to his collar. Blylevin seemed to have a grandfatherly smile etched permanently on his face. It unnerved George to see the security director smiling as he explained about Dr. Cardenas's disappearance. Well, this is way out of our league, he said, without the slightest change in expression. I mean, I only have half a dozen people in my group. We chase down industrial espionage and petty theft, for the Lord's sweet sake, not kidnappings. George knew how well Astro's security team chased down petty theft. The Lunar Underground lived on small borrowings from corporate storerooms. Dan said we should go to Stavanger, said George. Nodding cheerfully, Blylevin turned to his desktop phone and asked for Douglas Stavanger. When George and Blylevin were ushered into Stavanger's office up in the Grand Plaza, a fourth man was sitting in front of Stavanger's broad, glistening desk. Stavanger introduced him as Ulrich Maas, director of security for Selene. Maas looked like a real cop to George, muscular build, dark, suspicious eyes, scalp shaved bald. You realize that this may be nothing to get alarmed about, Stavanger said once all four men were seated. But Chris Cardenas isn't the kind of woman who suddenly goes into hiding, so I think we ought to try to find her. She's in Humphrey's place, down at the bottom level, George said flatly. Stavanger leaned back in his desk chair. Maas stared at George through narrowed eyes. Blylevin looked as if he were thinking about much more pleasant things. Through the office windows, George could see the broad expanse of the Grand Plaza. A couple of kids were flying above the green space like a pair of birds, flapping their brightly colored rented plastic wings. Grimacing, Stavanger asked, You're certain of that? It's Humphrey she was scared of, George replied. Where else would he stash her? Well, that area down there is the property of the Humphreys Trust, Maas pointed out. Selene doesn't have legal authority to go in and search it.
Not even if her life's on the line, George asked.
Stavanger said to Maas, Rick, I think you'll have to initiate a search.
Of Humphrey's place? George asked.
of all of Selene proper.